So, we'll be looking at the triennial cycle. Okay, and you're going to be getting a page of what that means in a second. So the chunk allotted for this first cycle of readings that would take you through the Bible, the first five books of the Bible in 3 years, is Genesis 1:1 to Genesis 2:3. As I just said, that's the first creation story that we have. And then this is paralleled by a Haftarah reading, just like you have a main course when you eat and a dessert. The main course is this first creation story, and the dessert is something from the prophets. And so the one chosen by many in antiquity was Isaiah 65, verses 17 to 25, and we'll see why that section is chosen. But I was also wondering to myself why they wouldn't have chosen Isaiah 45, but we can maybe discuss that a bit. We can add to it if we want. Just like when Jesus was in the synagogue, they finished the reading, and then they handed him the scroll of Isaiah and said, you know, what's for dessert? Read something to us. And then he opens it up, and it turns out to be a prophecy about himself. That was amazing. So there is a little bit of maybe, or at least in Jesus' day, there was a little bit of give what you could read from. But the point is that you'd have a chunk of the first five books and a chunk of the prophets as a finishing touch. And there needs to be a link between the two. It's not just random. So that said, let's look at our first creation story. And I know for some people this can be a dangerous story, but it's a beautiful story, and it was given to us, and we are going to read it with the intent to gain from it what we can of God's nature, of the big picture, because this is the setting. I mean, you can discuss why even start with creation. Why does the book of Genesis start with creation? And you can see it in light of a series of covenants that are made until it finally zeroes in on the very specific. You know, you can go from all mankind to Israel to priests to, you know, specific priestly families, and that's part of Genesis. So here we are in the creation. I'd like to read it together, and what we'll do is we'll say, I'll start, and when I stop, Gemma will continue for a day, and then, what's your name again?
Sally
will continue for a day, and we'll just go that way until we finish. And no, I did not mean a literal day. I meant a literary day. Okay. I'll start reading.
Right.
In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's our title. Now, the earth was without shape and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the watery deep. But the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the water. God said, "Let there be light." And if you were reading in Hebrew, verse 3, that's your first action of the story. Vayomer, and God said. God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, so God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day and the darkness night. There was evening and there was morning, making the first day.
And God said, "Let there be a vault between the waters to separate the water from the water." So God made the vault and separated the water under the vault from the water above it. And it was so. So God called the vault sky, and there was evening and there was morning, the second day.
Then God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit according to its kind, whose seed is in itself, on the earth. And it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed is in itself according to its kind. And God saw that it was good, so that the evening and the morning were the third day.
Then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons, and for days and years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth." And it was so. Then God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. So the evening and the morning were the fourth day.
God said, "Let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky." God created the great sea creatures, every living and moving thing with which the waters swarm, according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the water and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth." There was evening and there was morning, the fifth day.
And God said, "Let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, the livestock creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind." And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock and over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them.
God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Then God said, "I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth, and every tree that has fruit with seed with it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth, and all the birds of the air, and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has breath of life in it, I give every living plant for food." And so it was. God saw that all he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it, he rested from all the work of creating that he had done.
Right.
Amazing.
It is, yeah. Good.
Very good.
Now, to make sure we get to it, I want to go ahead and read Isaiah 65, 17 to 25, and then we're going to come back to Genesis. Good thing is that Genesis you'll be able to find quickly right afterwards. It's the very beginning. Isaiah 65, verses 17 to 25. You can keep reading over there. We'll start with John. Are you guys there? Not yet.
Isaiah 65,
verse 17.
For behold, I create new heavens and a new earth, and the former shall not be remembered or come to mind. But But be glad and rejoice forever in what I create. And behold, I create Jerusalem as a rejoicing, and her people a joy. I will rejoice in Jerusalem and joy in my people. The voice of weeping shall no longer be heard in her, nor the voice of crying. No more shall an infant from there live but a few days, nor an old man who has not fulfilled his days. For the child shall die in 100 years old, but the sinner being 100 years old shall be accursed. They shall build houses and inhabit them. They shall plant vineyards and eat their fruit. They shall not build and another inhabit. They shall not plant and another eat. For as the days of a tree, so shall be the days of my people. And the elect shall long enjoy the work of their hands. They shall not labor in vain, nor bring forth children for trouble. For they shall be the descendants of the blessed of the Lord, and their offspring with them. It shall come to pass that before they call, I will answer, and while they are still speaking, I will hear. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together, the lion shall eat straw like the ox, and dust shall be the serpent's food. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, says the Lord.
Okay.
Wow.
Well, there's a lot there to discuss.
And what's it remind us of?
What's it remind us of?
Revelation.
Revelation. 22. If you follow our normal readings, that is the reading in the New Testament, 1 John and Revelation 22. And those all spring to mind with a lot of these images. But really, all of those just go right back to creation. And it's interesting what they pick up on. The first connection, of course, is the Word. What is the title of our story in Genesis 1?
Creation.
In the beginning, God created.
Bereshit.
Bereshit bara. Right? God created. And so,
You said you can even do a little drash on Bereshit. Like, that bet drash
Yeah,
you could.
Bara.
In Bereshit. It's nice alliteration. Bereshit bara. Bara is he created. And that's a good point there. What is bara? Bara is an action that only God does. He creates. And this word is the word that kind of is closest to what we think of as creating something out of nothing. Bara. Other people don't do it, only God can. So
hey, it ties up with last week. Create in me a clean heart, O God. So only God can do the cleansing.
Yeah. Now, if you're going to start quoting English, you've got to be careful because you have to make sure it's going back to this word.
Right.
But it does use this word. And it uses another word too. Chadesh is to make new.
Yeah.
That's also a word that can be used in creative actions. What's the other big word we're looking for?
Yatzar.
Yatzar is also to create, but it's much more, it's also to form something in pottery.
It's more human,
it's more plastic, it's more hands-on. And humans can do it. You know, a yotzer is a potter. Whereas contrasting to bara, that's just God. Bara, yatzar. Chadesh is to make it new, but it's a sense of like recreate.
I mean, you use that in modern Hebrew. Sure,
to renew it.
To renew it,
to make it new. And since you quoted create in me a clean heart.
Is it the same word?
It uses bra and chadesh.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Something we got to you.
something only God can do. And within this story, it's interesting because the title says God created. And then where does it specifically use this word bara within the story? Do you guys remember? Reshit bara. No, I'm talking just in the Genesis story. So after this title of God created, using this only God word, God created the heavens and the earth, it comes again when God makes the taninim hagdolim. And all we know about these are that they're huge and they're reptilian. So whether you translate it, I have God created the great sea creatures, you want to call them sea monsters, you want to call them dinosaurs, I don't know. But God created them, and he used this word, bara.
What is the duration of one day?
What is it, what?
Duration of one day.
Okay, we're not talking about that quite yet.
Just give us the verse for the...
For the taninim?
Yeah.
Is Genesis 1:21. And God created the great sea creatures and every living and moving thing with which the waters swarmed, according to their kinds. So even these sea monsters, whatever they are, the biggest, baddest thing you can imagine, God created them. So he's on top of, outside of, even this big, huge thing. And then the second place within the story that this word comes is for what? Sorry? Yeah. Which is?
Us. Our great man.
Humankind. Yeah. Ha'adam. The humans. God creates humans in his image. In the image of God, he creates him. Male and female, he creates them. Or he created them. So that's where this word comes. I don't know why it specifically mentions it about the sea monsters, but it's certainly interesting. And there's a lot of midrash that in the New Jerusalem or the world to come, at the wedding feast of the Lamb, we'll all sit down and have Leviathan, one of these great sea monsters that has been pickled since way back when. And, it makes a nice bookend. I don't know. I'm not crazy about pickled Leviathan. Doesn't bother me one way or other. But
that's a midrash. It's not biblical.
It's a midrash.
Could be crocodile.
It's a midrash. Yeah, it could be crocodile. Massive, giant crocodiles. Tanin, by the way, today means crocodile. In the Bible, it was a reptilian word that could encompass many things. But often in the context of supposed sea monsters, and then there's Aaron's rod that becomes a tanin and gobbles down the other Egyptians' rods. So, of course, that could have been a sea monster too. I don't know.
And the significance of using the word create three times for man,
That is an interesting thing, that it keeps returning, this create. Man is definitely special in that sense. And you could make your own midrash out of that. We get three creates. The sea monsters, as big and bad as they are, only got one create. So man is really the pinnacle of creation. What comes last is like the climax of the creation.
Sharing the verse, the Isaiah passage you read, sort of about people that will create the heavens and earth, is that Bara?
Mm-hmm. That is Bara.
But you know the.
In 20, sorry, just let me just say, in verse 27, are you saying he's the pinnacle because it says it three times? He created mankind, he created them, and a male and female, he created them. Or what makes you say it's the pinnacle?
Well, there are several things. We're just kind of jumping through the story there, but it's the last thing created. So in many senses, the last is the best kind
of
thing.
Keep the best
for the last, yeah. and you have this thrice repetition of bara, that is like a special creative action.
They're the only things made in God's image.
Right. It's set apart all the other creative actions. And it's emphasized. It's repeated. So for all those reasons, I'm saying it's the
climax. What we read is God said for everything.
Yeah.
But when God created man in some other places, it says he did something. He formed the man
okay,
by his hand.
This week... No. No.
You know, creation
we
of
can't
man is
jump.
Different.
This week we're looking at the first creation story. We are going to stick to the first creation story. So anything that
but
you
this
take
is
from
creation story.
This you find me the words. Find me the words
yes,
in Genesis
it's
1
in
through
two.
Genesis 2-3.
Ah yes, it's
okay, where?
And he formed the man.
Where?
In Genesis 2.
No. It's got to be up to Genesis 2-3, not Genesis 2-4 following. That's a different story.
We'll do that next week.
That's next week. Genesis 1, we're looking at.
It says here, build.
No. Build is chapter 2.
When he built Eve.
No. That's chapter 2. We're doing chapter 1.
Okay.
You can talk any word in this chapter.
Creation of mankind is different than all other things.
That is true. I totally agree. And it's in the image of God. Yes. Yes.
So what word is used in verse 26? Let us make man in our image. Because that's the first mention of man, isn't it?
It just says does.
Yeah, or the regular make.
Yes, do.
Make,
seven.
Do. That's often
do.
The same word.
Okay.
In many
so what's
languages,
that in
but
Hebrew?
Ours. Now say, let us do, say. Let us make.
2:7 is the verse you asked.
In the image of God.
And Jabal al-Rab.
And what it means to be in the image of God, you could that's a whole study in and of itself.
It's a month study.
It's also, who was he speaking to when he said, let us make?
Yeah.
Who's us?
Yeah, who's the us, yes.
Yeah, let us. It's the same in Tower of Babel, let us go down.
Yeah.
And it uses the same.
So that's the first
imagery.
Us. That's the first God's us.
Son, Holy
that's
Spirit.
The first it's us. Yeah. Well, it's not a say. It's part of the form
1,
of the verb is
it's,
let's do it.
It's the triune God.
There
God
you go.
Was God was it God was in.
See, this passage isn't a problem for Christians.
No. Yeah.
If you believe in a Trinity, you can explain it quite easily.
Yeah.
If you don't, it's a little more hard to explain.
One interpretation is it's he's talking to angels.
To the angels, yeah.
Yeah.
God speaking to the angels.
Or it's a royal we.
royal we.
Or it's...
Yeah.
There's other explanations.
The royal we is also good.
I like the royal we.
Mm-hmm. You have to be English to understand the royal we.
So, we're created in God's image, which you could say, what does that mean? To be God's image? The Aramaic translated it, well, some of the Aramaic translations put a speaking spirit. In fact, Targum Onkelo says that.
Same character.
Meaning, none of the animals spoke, but what differentiates humans, basically? We speak. We have, according to here, all creation has a nefesh haya. It has a living soul. So, the way we divide everything might be a little different than the way they divided everything. We tend to think animals don't have souls. Or in our mind, soul means something different than soul meant in the Bible.
Soul is the human being.
It's a living creature.
The living creature.
Any living creature.
This
as
is
a nefesh. Nefesh haya.
Soul. He became soul.
Yeah, but an animal is a living creature. I mean, I think... We have
wait, hold on 1 second. What did you say? Yeah, the soul is in your blood, right? But in the Hebrew Bible, nefesh, the concept of nefesh is just a living being that is more than just flesh. It's a living being, and it's somehow, it can represent your body as well. Which is interesting, since the King James was translated in English, you can also say in English, there was not a soul there. When you say that, are you talking about little ghosts hovering?
No,
you're saying there was no being, there's no person, there's no living person there. Yeah. So you have soul stand in the place of a person. Mm. So you have some of that same, that came in through our translation of the Bible.
There's a strict Western concept of a body-spirit dichotomy.
Yeah. Right.
And there's no dichotomy.
Yeah.
It's not a hard and fast dichotomy. It's much more complex than we imagine. There's a soul, you can talk about a soul that sometimes includes the body, sometimes is more in the body. You can talk about a spirit that's definitely other than the body.
In other words, soul there, plus neshama is the soul.
Okay, neshama is another word we use for soul.
No, not for soul. Neshama is ruah.
Yeah, it's also breath.
Breath.
Right. But here, that's not the word used. It's nefesh. And nefesh actually has more to do... Well, I won't go there.
Shema.
No, I was going to say nefesh. We have other words for nefesh, like nofesh. Vacation. Vayinafesh is to take a break. But, to...
Breathe easy,
that's right. But quickly, let's point out some things that are particular to this creation story. We have the first big action is what?
The creation of the heavens and the earth.
Okay, wait, but according to the way the story's written, if you're following, you have a title. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was this and that.
So the first great action is splitting the night and day.
The first was hovering. The first, no, that's not the first action. That's all background.
Oh.
And the way the story is told.
Verse 3.
Which is what action?
Then God said.
That's the first action.
Oh, I see.
So you have creation by God's word. He speaks. And he says, let there be
light.
Light. So the first thing he creates is light, and he creates it with a word.
Just repeat what you've said, because that was really important. The first action is God says or God speaks? God says.
And he said. Yeah, that's our first event of the story.
So that's amazing, because if we go back again, it's the word becomes flesh,
In the beginning,
God created the heavens and the earth. The heavens and the earth. This is relating to, that statement relates to the whole story, and it's marked for us in our grammar. It is not the first event of the story. It's not Vayivra Elohim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. It's Bereshit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. It's a very typical way that you would start a new section, a new unit. You can give a title. It's a break from, in this case, whatever comes before, which is nothing. This is the title of the whole story. And it's summarizing. It's already telling you he created the heavens and the earth. And now it's going to give you all the background and give you the story.
Another way you can translate it is, in the beginning of when God created the heavens and the earth.
No.
It's a bit
semicolon.
It's a bit like a fairy story. Once upon a time,
right.
You set the story. The king was sitting in his castle, or whatever it happened to be.
I'm saying, in terms of what you're saying about like the first action, created is not necessarily a description of something that he did yet.
Yet.
It's
right.
The word
right.
created.
It's not necessarily
like what we have in our Bibles right now. It says God created the heavens and earth. Another way you can translate that first sentence is, in the beginning of when God created the heavens and the earth.
You cannot add.
I'm not adding. It's a different way of translating.
No, this is
I like the way
human
the net.
Wisdom.
It's not human wisdom. It's what the Hebrew says.
Okay, let's. Genesis 1:1 in my Bible,
the
net translation, says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, full stop. And that, they've set that sentence apart from the following. And I think they did that correctly, because they're trying to reflect this structure of how biblical Hebrew stories are told.
So, and his first action as he spoke, he said,
that's the main event of the story, right, as it's told.
Right.
The first main event is, and he said, Vayomer. And he says, Yehi o, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. So his second action is he saw the light. And his third action is he separated that light from the darkness. And then he called the light day and the darkness night. And there was evening and there was morning the first day, or one day.
Is it time to explain the duration of one day? To answer my first question.
Okay, what do you want to say about the duration of a day?
Well, what you say, you are the teacher.
Well, I want to say that this whole story is divided into days for us, and it's all setting us up to lead to the week, how we work for 6 days and we rest on the seventh day, on Shabbat. And since creation, that was created for us to have a rest. And so the creation story is very carefully ordered according to days. Now, if you want to jump from there to start counting hours and seconds,
yes,
you have a bit of a problem, because the sun is created on the fourth day. So I don't know, nothing, no day is measurable in the world as we know it now without the sun. Because a day, a concept of 24 hours, very much depends on the sun. So,
but after creating the sun, the other days that follows is also mentioned, evening and morning.
Sure. How no, the
hours,
evening and morning was mentioned this
how
first
many
day.
Hours, so the whole
evening
every
and
day,
morning.
It's 24-hour day.
It's evening also, and morning was mentioned even before the sun was around.
And you believe
very
that?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You believe that?
Mm-hmm.
It says
that's
evening and morning.
Yes,
is
I see it right here.
Even before he created the sun.
Yes, for sure.
Yes.
There it is.
Yes. And after.
And after, yeah.
After, but yes, the amazing thing is that evening and morning is mentioned before there's a sun.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
but it's he separated light from darkness.
Right.
Yes.
Which is before he created the sun.
Okay.
That's amazing, actually. Just think about that.
Yeah.
I've never thought of that.
I know.
I've never thought of that, that he separates the light from the darkness,
yes,
and we would say
morning and evening.
Because in the end there won't be any sun, and at the beginning there was no sun. The Lamb will be our sun.
That's
end.
Right.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Yeah.
You jump to the Revelation.
Yeah,
I know.
It
has
no
meaning.
But it ties, up together.
But isn't that where we're going? Is Revelation?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and ancient Jewish interpreters also had this. What was this light before the sun?
Mm.
And they connect it to the Psalms where it says he puts on light like a garment.
Yeah.
They say this was this light of God's garment.
I love it. I think that's right.
He basically spread out. It's a special light,
no,
basically.
It says he
yeah.
formed the light, he created the darkness.
That's right.
Which is a very...
Which is where?
I think it's Isaiah. I'm
yes,
sorry,
where?
I don't know the...
In heaven,
quote.
Or on earth.
But
it's Isaiah 45.
I find that somebody explained it once that he had to pull himself back in order to create darkness, because he was light.
Right.
And he was everything.
It's,
but in order to create darkness, he had to.
It's very fascinating.
Light.
Very fascinating.
Wow.
And if you talk to Israel Knoll, he thinks that Isaiah was in a conversation with Genesis 1.
Have you got the Isaiah reference? Can you find it?
Yes.
Isaiah
45.
45.
Ah, that's why you said 45.
Yeah, that's
Isaiah 45. Okay, let's start in verse 18. For this is what the Lord says, the one who created the sky. He is the true God, the one who formed the earth and made it. Ko'amar Adonai, Bore Hashamayim. So that's that word, Bore. Hu Ha'elohim, Yotzer Ha'aretz. There he's using the cognate Yatzar, where you're forming it. Yotzer Ha'aretz, Ve'oseh.
Where have you
18.
Got to? 45,
18.
All oh, right, got it.
Wait, did you skip 45, 7?
Where he forms the light.
45,
7.
Yeah,
I form light and create darkness.
Yeah, okay, no, that's actually where we should have started.
That's the verse that...
It's where, that's where he creates
evil. Okay, so let's go back to 7. There you go.
God creates evil.
Let's go back to 6, actually. I do this so people will recognize from east to west that there is no God but me. Right?
Right.
Because all the other nations but Israel think that there are more than one God. And God's trying to say through Isaiah, there is no other God. I am it. I am the Lord. I have no peer. So in verse 7, I am the one who forms light
and
creates darkness.
Amazing.
There you go. So if you wanted in Hebrew, Yotzer O, and there he's flipped it around. He's actually Yotzerim the O. Uvore Choshech. He creates darkness. Ose shalom, uvore ra. Okay.
Make peace and create calamity.
The one who brings about peace and creates calamity. That's how Net has translated it.
Because it's too hard for them to say evil.
Well, here's a problem. We have a word ra in Hebrew.
Humans have a hard time.
How you slice up the meanings of words are not identical from language to language. Right? So in English, we have a word bad. We have a word evil.
Wicked.
We have a word wicked. So bad and evil are different, right? Evil is worse, and it's very much moral, and it tends to be abstract. Bad could be any little thing. Oh, that's too bad, you know?
Yeah, a rotten potato.
Yeah, that's bad. So, ra, when you're coming across a text and you see ra, this word in Hebrew covers all of that.
Everything.
So the only way you know is by context.
The opposite of peace.
So you could say he makes peace, there's shalom on one side, and he also makes ra. So there are translations. What do you have, by the way, in yours? Verse 7.
I bring prosperity and I create disaster.
Disaster. Okay. In the context of prophecy, when God threatens ra, it's usually talking about some kind of disaster that's a type of punishment. So that's my translation has calamity here. So in the context of shalom, you have prosperity, you have peace.
Where I've got, I bring prosperity. Is it shalom in Hebrew?
It's shalom. Ose shalom uvore ra.
Either way, he's making the point that God is responsible for everything that happens.
Exactly.
Nothing happens outside his
responsibility. And he says, Ani Adonai oseh chol ele.
There's no dualism.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. There isn't this thing where God lets go of the wheel and lets in some other being.
Yes.
And Satan.
He's saying, in case you didn't know, I'm in control of everything. I'm the one that creates everything.
But
and
this
so,
contradicts with the verse, God is love.
Depends what you define.
Ra.
Depends how you define love.
Well,
if love means that you allow someone to
take a fork
in the road.
Love means you're not allowed to spank, then maybe it contradicts.
Not like the insurance companies in America, acts of God.
But it is interesting that here, in Isaiah's day, he wants to point out, he wants to make it very clear that there is only one God. And so he wants to get rid of all the room that you could argue for more. And he wants to make sure you know that it's God's will in the end. God is responsible for everything. And you could say that...
It links with... I mean, what our brother's saying is actually right. God is love. And the truth, the reality about this incredible loving God is his terrible justice.
Right.
I mean, you know, the famous John 3:16, somebody quoted, because God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son that whoever should believe in him
will not perish.
Well, perishing is not very loving, so he gives an opportunity to get out, but he creates both. He gives you an opportunity to not perish. He gives you an opportunity to not have disaster, because the disaster is a sort of judgment.
Unbelief.
I don't think he created
unbelief is from
evil.
The devil.
I don't think he created evil or
gave us the choice. And
okay.
He created the choice.
I agree with that.
So we have the choice to choose, which one.
And the interesting thing is, in Genesis 1, does God create darkness?
It's already there.
No, it's already there. Yeah. Darkness was already there. Water was already there.
Yes.
And that is true in some other stories from the time. That is a concept they already came with. And God created light, and he called it good.
But if your original intention for what this Bible study is supposed to be about, it's supposed to be about Isaiah 65, right?
Right.
Where did that connection come?
Bore.
Bore. And what does Isaiah 65 bore?
A new heaven and a new earth.
But then what's the third thing, bore?
Well, you want to go back to Isaiah 65? But here it has bore here for Choshech and Ra. It uses bore
in
Isaiah 45.
No, but that's not the connection. It's 65.
No, I know, I know.
No, you're right. We can go all over Isaiah, and there's huge connections. But in 65 specifically, you have the heaven and the earth, and then in verse 18.
Then he creates a new Jerusalem.
But it's different, the first creation from the second creation. Because first creation, there was no man. But on 65:17, mankind were there, We can see the new creation by our eyes.
Okay, that.
I mean, not all the saints, people of God.
Another thing before we jump to Isaiah 65, in Genesis, if you were to make a chart of the days, you'll see that he creates a space and then he fills it with something, right? So you have light and darkness. The first day, he creates three spaces and then he goes and he fills them with the appropriate thing. You have division of the waters the second day. You have land. How did I do that? Land and water the third day.
Constellations.
So the fourth day, you have the sun, moon, and stars that govern, light and darkness. Then you have the fish and the birds.
Things in the water.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very clever.
Things in the land.
And
that's
then
a
you
fast
have,
drawing.
That's wow. Clever. Very creative.
Land.
Yeah. Related.
Except the Tanaim, of course, are here, because maybe they're big sea monsters down there. So it's very ordered. And a lot of other keys are that It's always good, and everything is in its place. Everything is according to its kind, and it all has seed. There's this idea of abundance, multiplication, swarm. That's a great thing. Just be big.
Yeah.
Reproduce.
Abundant.
Be fruitful.
Abundant.
So you have this overwhelming generosity. You have goodness. You have order, and connected to order is a concept of justice, and I think that's something that Isaiah is going to pick up on, that as we see the order in the first story, there's an implication of God's fundamental justice, and that's what he chooses to accentuate later.
But with justice, there is mercy, and
yes.
They
and
both meet together.
Yeah. And this is set apart and it's holy, so I'm just going to put two little candles there. Because you got to have a picture of the things.
What is that?
That's Shabbat with two candles.
Yes, two candles.
Okay.
This is set apart, you take a break, it's holy, no more creation. Unless, it does say on the seventh day you finished the creation, so I don't know, maybe you're still working at dawn, but then it was over.
The candles are perfect, because in Revelation, the lamb is a lichnos.
Yeah, it's a lichnos, it's a lamp. The lamb is the lamp. One big lamp.
Because it's just...
That would be hard to draw.
But my point about Jerusalem is it's very interesting, right?
Here's the other thing. Before you get to all the prophecies, what do the animals eat? What do the humans eat?
No.
What do the humans eat specifically?
The first bread was vegetables and fruits.
Fruits?
Fruits and vegetables.
No. Humans don't eat vegetables.
Seeds.
The fruits and seeds.
Bread.
Okay, any fruit that has seed?
Mm-hmm.
bread, grain.
And any grass that has seed, which is a grain.
What is available in the Garden of Eden?
Grain.
Oh,
okay. So we get cereal and we get fruit.
You get muesli.
Yeah. And then what does it say? Everything else eats.
Grass.
You've got seed-bearing plants, and you've got every tree that has fruit. Maybe they got oranges and plums.
Yeah.
Green herb.
Okay, everything else eats. We've gotten grass. Everything green. Greens.
Grass.
This is a Bible study on echo correctiveness.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Everyone donates to Greenpeace.
So if you're wondering on Shabbat why we light candles, that sets the day apart as holy. Why do you thank God? Why does bread and wine symbolize a meal? Because when we were given food as people, we were given basically
bread and fruit of the vine, which is wine.
So your Shabbat blessings are thanking God for the bread and thanking Him for the wine. And that encompasses all food.
Yes. But the wine here is unfermented.
With the wine
That's
here?
That's a human interpretation.
Okay, no.
The fruit of the vine, she said.
True.
The fruit of the
when
vine.
It grows on the tree, it is definitely unfermented. But fruit of the vine is a rabbinic idiom that goes back to Jesus' day and always referred to wine. Absolutely. And the fact that he says, I will not drink of the fruit of the vine again, just shows you that he was using prayers that everybody knew. Okay.
I'm sorry to push you on here, but you've only got
5-7 minutes?
Isaiah 65:25. Uh-huh. This is where you're going?
That's where I'm going.
Isaiah 65:25 says, a wolf and a lamb will eat grass together, basically.
And
so it's like full circle.
It's full circle, exactly. So all these prophecies you read about lions eating grass, and you think, how strange, how weird. Well, this is equally strange and weird then. This is the creation story, that lions, everything, every living animal is supposed to eat grass.
Can a lion live off of just grass?
Now?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, like, physiologically, like it can't.
No, not now.
Yeah.
But in the first story, in this ideal creation where everything's harmonious, yes. And so,
I'm sure if you had a pet lamb, a pet god, you could do amazing things with it. I mean, I'm sure that the all of us have eating habits, and I'm sure it includes lions, which have been accrued through years and years and years.
We have these teeth here that I don't need to eat apples.
So prepare yourself to be vegetarian from now on.
Well, it's not just vegetarian.
Catch up with
if you really, there's this whole thing called, you guys heard a hallelujah diet? So whole, go back to Genesis 1. If you're really going to do that, you must eat fruit that has seed in it and grass that has seed in it. You cannot have lettuce and you cannot have broccoli. So good luck with that one. You will be very limited. I would find that personally challenging. I'm not saying to do that, by the way. I think broccoli is blessed and I eat it happily. And also lettuce. I enjoy salads. But I'm just saying, if you're going to go with what the story actually says, that's where you have to go. But this is important in this... It shows that fundamentally there was harmony in all of creation. And when I look around and I see dogs eating kittens, there's something inside of me that gets bothered.
Yeah, it bothered me too.
Would it bother you too? Like, why does that have to happen? Why does one animal have to die for the other one to live? Like, couldn't there have been a better way? You know, that's just nature and whatever. But basically, according to chapter 1, that's not just nature. That's kind of nature bent. And that, like, perfect nature would actually be everybody together. Nobody's got to eat each other.
But isn't it ironic that it all comes back to Jerusalem?
Yes.
For the creation.
Where we all eat each other.
He keeps bringing you back.
Let's go there.
No, I mean, just this last week, what happened in Jerusalem.
You're right.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, of all the places on earth, this one little place.
The lion and the lamb laying down the bed.
Mm-hmm. And that nobody... And he does.
No, everyone here is our lions. I mean,
okay, so this new heavens and a new earth and a new Jerusalem. Let's go to Isaiah 65:17 again then.
I mean, in a sense, it's saying it's the Jerusalem we have today, which is full of wolves and lions, is not the Jerusalem of the future because it comes from heaven. You know, it's a new Jerusalem that's being created.
Do you want to hear the net note on a new heavens and a new earth? It says, this hyperbolic statement likens the coming transformation of Jerusalem to a new creation of the cosmos. There you go.
So that's something that people can do.
It does make sense, though, doesn't it, on
it's
some level?
Be...
Because when God reigns, when the people of Israel reigns, when Jesus returns, I suppose you could say, when Israel returns to the Lord, the nations will know that he is God. So there's going to be huge blessing coming out of Jerusalem.
Yeah.
Where all the nations come up to worship the Lord at the Feast of Tabernacles, it's not just for the fun of it. It's because in the end, the nations are to know that he is God.
There is definitely...
So Jerusalem is absolutely key.
If you're looking at verse 17 and 18, you have this repetition of Bore. That's an act of God. Here, I'm about to create a new heaven and a new earth. And the first won't even... like. You won't even think about them anymore. You'll be so absorbed with these awesome new ones.
Yeah, but this is Gan Eden here.
It doesn't say it's Gan Eden.
Yeah, but if you read further in the story, you understand that it's
no.
Yes.
This story? Which story?
Further on in Genesis.
Okay.
The people are in Gan Eden. And we are in Gan Eden.
No, we're not. This story ends in 2:3. And there's another title, there's another story that starts in 2:4, and that's the story of Gan Eden. And this passage in Isaiah does weave the two in one way. It brings in the snake.
Mm-hmm. That's a very
the snake is popped in there.
25.
The wolf and the lamb will eat grass together, and the lion and the cattle, will eat grain.
And the dust will be the serpent's food.
And the dust will be the serpent's food.
So the serpent doesn't get reformed. He remains.
No, the serpent remains a serpent. But at least he's eating dust and not biting heels anymore.
Right?
Right?
He remains cursed. He remains on the floor. Because if he was to go back to his Gan Eden state of being, he'd be able to go back up on feet or whatever.
Or talking.
Talking, but he was also upright. Wasn't
yeah.
He was.
Jack, where's that verse?
Apparently, because it says from now on.
From now on, you'll be on your belly. You'll be
on your gehor. In the dust. In the
and
earth.
Dust will be your food.
You gave it to me the other day.
And then it has this.
It will no longer injure or destroy my entire.
It's interesting. Home. Verse 25 is a hard one to make complete sense of. Because it's talking about this ideal back to creation, back to perfection, here where everybody's eating grass. And then it just like pops in this snake thing. And then it says, they will no longer injure or destroy. Well, who's the they? Anybody? Or are you talking about snakes all of a sudden? In the Hebrew, the snake is singular, of course. Ve nahash afar lachmo. Verse 25 of Isaiah 65. So,
it's the inhabitants of Jerusalem.
But the snake, the dirt will be his bread or his food. And then it says, Lo yare'u. They won't do bad and they won't corrupt on all my holy mountain. So, when I first read that, I think of it as everybody who is there won't do evil or corrupt anything. So if you think of the interpretation as Nahash symbolizing, you know, the devil, and that having influence, people making wrong choices and doing the bad thing, you could read all of that into it. Or you could go with a very direct reading that snakes all of a sudden won't be able to do anything bad in Jerusalem.
It's an interesting.
It's an
interesting climax of his to end on the holy mountain of not hurting or destroying, because Isaiah is kind of, he is a more kind of universalist. Moral,
but
he's
very
type of those. Yeah, he's more of a universalist kind of moral type preacher. But here he's talking about a, you know, like why should he care so much about a very particular specific site? Like you would think he would end on, and then everyone will live righteously, or everyone will, you know, like why is that the climax that the mountain isn't symbolically maintained as a pure site, or you know what I mean? It is.
Well, you have Isaiah 66 start off. Hey, the whole sky is my chair, is my throne,
right.
And the earth is my footstool.
Right.
It's not just Jerusalem. Like,
right.
How can you build me a house in Jerusalem? It's everything.
Right. So it seems like a bit of a contradiction.
The verse I was looking for: with those who turn away from you will be written in the dust because they forget, forsaken the Lord, the spring of living water. So
where are you?
In Jeremiah.
You're in Jeremiah. Okay,
Jeremiah,
yeah.
17.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like the devil is busy, the dust that he's eating is, I assume it's the same word.
Dead people are symbolized in the Hebrew Bible as eating dust. Yeah.
They're eating
under the world, eating dust.
They've forsaken the Lord, the living water. It's sort of amazing that on the one hand, you've got this idea of living water, which comes on and on and on throughout all the stories of Jerusalem, and the living water is going to get poured out and so on.
If you look, by the way, at back to what Danny was saying, isn't it strange that Jerusalem is this climax that is so small?
That's the whole point of this.
That's the whole point of Isaiah, is all about Jerusalem.
And that's how Revelation sees it, too.
That's how Revelation sees it. And if you look at how Genesis is laid out, you have a series of covenants with, you know, the whole world, and then it focuses on one people. And then within that people, it focuses on priests. Within the priests, it focuses in on one family. And many things, this is creation not so much, but everything following has a sign with it. So the flood has a sign. Well, I guess that is the sign for creation. The Brit Milah, the people have circumcision as a sign. The priest, you know, it just goes down, and it's kind of like concentric circles. So you're focusing in, and in one sense, maybe that's the inverse to the future, is you would start in and focus out. So where do the priests end up? They end up in the temple. Where's the temple? Jerusalem.
Yeah, but it
so
also.
So now we're focusing in on Jerusalem to focus out to be O Lagoin, to everybody in the world.
Right.
So like it zeroes in to then spin out again.
And it also focuses right in on the Haftarah, which we would normally do today, where it focuses right in when he's talking about Yeshua, the servant of the Lord, all the way through. I've called you in righteousness, I'll take hold of your hand. I will keep you and make you to be a covenant for the people.
Mm-hmm,
so the final
exactly.
covenant, all the way down this line that you're talking about, is Yeshua himself. And from there, it can go out to the world.
Yeah.
You know, everything is explained in Revelation, I believe. Because prior to the new creation, there will be a huge fire encompassing all the world. The whole surface of the world will be the lake of fire. You know, the fire that comes down from God upon people, upon Satan and the false prophet and
does
everything
the lake of fire
who
come
are
down from
coming to attack the New Jerusalem. After that, exactly, in Revelation 21, he saw. Then
what
I
do you
saw
think Isaiah
new,
meant?
Huh?
What do you think Isaiah meant when he's talking to his people?
Okay, but after the judgment, this is after the final judgment, there will be, I mean, the lion will eat grass, everything, in the new creation, you know, after the earth being burned completely.
Here's the thing about biblical prophecy. In general, most biblical prophecy is given to people for their benefit.
Right.
It's a revelation for them. Now, there can be layers of meaning. There can also be a future application, but it has to be applicable to the people he's giving it to as well. Just like when God gives us a word, it usually has to do with us and our times,
but there is eschatology.
Not so much, you know, 1,000 years from now.
Yes, right. It is after 1,000 years.
Yeah, but
after the 1,000 years.
Now there are times
in Revelation 20.
There are times when the prophets told, bind this up, seal it for the future.
Right.
But notice, if you're told to seal that one up, it means in general you're not sealing the other ones up, and they're not for the future, they're for now.
And
so
the kingdom of God is with you.
But he opened
now.
This book, you know, the sealed book.
If we're only going to read the last chapter of Revelation, hallelujah, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But we're starting actually right at the beginning and trying to unravel the whole story. And we've got 3 glorious years to do it in.
We do. And as we read Isaiah, let's think also about what Isaiah was talking about, who he was talking to, where he was when he was talking, and what that might mean. And then extrapolate from that what it might mean in the future. Does it mean the future from now? Does it mean way, way, way beyond history in the future? These are all questions you can ask of the text. And we don't have time to ask them together here. But you've heard several interpretations given.
That's very good.
That
is great.
So, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Can I just add, this list of the 3-year cycle was given to us by Lois Teberberg when she was here, and she's wonderful, and she has a book called Sitting at the Feet of Rabbi Jesus, and I have one copy for sale for 60 shekels if anybody wants it.
And she probably would be able to give you more if you went to the website as well.
Yeah, but if you go to the website, it costs money.
And the readings are from Charles Perrot, how you pronounce it, Reading of the Bible in the Ancient Synagogue.
I just had to do my plug for her book.
How do you only get 4 to 5 weeks?
Where are the other second?
He only copied one page.
I think he's only done 1 page. There's a whole 3 years.
Jewish-oriented.